I wrote about this a little while back, and I think I can't remember the exact allusion I made, but it was like this: the odds of you getting assaulted on the subway, if you just look at it from a pure statistical standpoint, are like about the same as, I think, like you're getting hit by lightning or something, right? It's incredibly rare given just the volume of people who ride the subway.
That was reporter Felipe de la Hoz, and this is Epicenter NYC. We connect our communities to news, information, and each other. I'm your host, Amber Castillo. Despite statistics suggesting that New York remains one of the safest large cities in the U.S., the lived experience for many of us tells a different story. So why is there such a disconnect between the numbers and our feelings of safety? Today, S. Mitra Calita, co-founder and publisher of Epicenter NYC, talks to reporter Felipe de la Hoz about the current crime landscape. They'll touch on the nuances of crime data, comparing New York City to other parts of the country and to its own historical trends. They'll also explore how the pandemic has impacted crime rates and address the complex issues intertwined with public safety that many of our neighbors face, like homelessness and mental health. Before we jump in, a quick message from our team.
Hi, I'm Carolina from the Epicenter NYC team, here to remind you to safeguard your fun, your plans, and your trips. Get vaccinated and don't let illness cancel your joy. It's your season, not flu season, not COVID season. You can schedule your appointment now and we can help. Send us a note at hello@epicenter-nyc.com or call or text us at 917-818-2690.
Now back to the show. Here's Mitra and Felipe.
I wanted to focus this week on crime in New York City. It just feels like we're in a moment where the conversation is hitting higher pitch levels. I'll frame out why this is on my mind. Some of it's, of course, the subways. And we at Epicenter have been covering violence on the subways, the safety on the subways. And then there's like kind of more just like stuff that's hitting closer to home. And Felipe, as you know, I have two girls, and we've been talking a lot about strategizing their walks home at night. My elder daughter had a friend who was living with us for the last 6 weeks, and she's new to New York. So granted, some of my concern was that I'm dealing with someone who's just like not raised in the way that my kids have been. But nonetheless, I'll be honest with you, like I didn't really plot those movements for them last year or the year before. So as I was paying attention to like my own behaviors, I just thought I should turn to you for a bit of a gut check on whether other New Yorkers are also being more cautious and if there's something more going on here. I think it's important to note that we've been here before, like in Jackson Heights during the Trump years, for example. There would be rumors of deportations or ICE or racist incidents on the streets. And so definitely for some communities, in my household included, we've retrenched before. So I don't want to make this only about crime, that sometimes there's like a climate issue going on too. So a basic level, like, is New York City less safe than 4 or 5 years ago?
Yeah, so I think, you know, the question of crime is always interesting because a crime rate in and of itself doesn't necessarily mean that much unless you kind of look at it comparatively. And so there are ways to look at this comparatively. There are kind of different approaches that you can take. You can look at it, New York City compared to itself, New York City compared to like the country, New York City sort of compared to like general trends. So kind of depending on what you like, how you frame the question, you can arrive at sort of different answers, even if the data is relatively the same. So, you know, starting with like how New York City compares to other parts of the country, this is just something I always like to emphasize. We have among the lowest major crime rates. I was looking at some data. The New York Times actually had some recent charts that were pretty helpful in looking at, you know, gun homicides. It's just an example where they are much, much higher, even in kind of suburban and rural areas around the country than they are in New York. And sort of sometimes we forget that because there's kind of a magnification effect where if somebody gets shot on your block, and there have been a few shootings on my block in the last several years, it feels like it hits very close to home. Nonetheless, if you look at it in terms of a function of like density and like how many people live in the city and sort of like how frequent it actually is statistically for violent crime to occur, it's relatively rare. So to go back to your question of New York City compared to itself, New York City's crime rates basically had been on a precipitous decline starting roughly in the kind of late 90s, early 2000s. And that decline continued essentially unabated until the pandemic. Then the pandemic hits, all kinds of, you know, social, political, economic effects, you know, flow downstream from that. There's an uptick. One thing that I always kind of try to emphasize in these conversations is that, you know, if something jumps from one to two, you can say that it jumped 100%. If something jumped, you know, from 10 to 15, it only jumped 50%. Nonetheless, the second number remains higher. And so the crime rate, especially what we call kind of index crimes, you know, murder, robbery, assault, rape, that kind of thing, ticked up in a way that was, you know, marked during the kind of the pandemic and kind of 2021 and a little bit 2022. But it hasn't actually even approached the levels that it was at, not just in kind of the bad old days of the 80s and the 90s, but even like the mid 2000s, you know, and kind of like the earlier part of the century, right? And so we never quite, you know, got even within striking range of that. And this year, you know, kind of the latter part of last year and the earlier part of this year, the crime rates have started falling again. Now, there are a few complicating factors. One of them is that one of the index crimes, which is like Grand Theft Auto, has like spiked up a lot, in part because there are these kind of weird particularities around certain makes of car that are like very easy to steal. And so there's a little bit of fuzziness in the data that can be a little bit distracting. Big picture, I would say that there are causes for concern in certain realms. And obviously, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to talk about New York City as a whole because the crime rates vary so dramatically. And so insofar as there are hotspots, it's basically where the hotspots have long been, and those have experienced, you know, upticks in crime. But sort of, you know, big picture, I don't think it's accurate to say that, you know, New York City is experiencing anything like a kind of this big resurgence of crime.
I wanted to talk about the subways. This is an area where I hear a mix of anecdote and also, you know, the increase of homelessness on the subways feels undeniable. I just wondered if you've looked at the data around whether the New York City subway system is safer than it was before.
I wrote about this a little while back, and I think I can't remember the exact allusion I made, but it was like this: the odds of you getting assaulted on the subway, if you just look at it from a pure statistical standpoint, are like about the same as, I think, like you're getting hit by lightning or something, right? It's incredibly rare given just the volume of people who ride the subway, which are, you know, number in the millions per day. Obviously, again, it sort of depends a lot on like the station and where you are. You know, there are a few factors here that I kind of want to take piecemeal. Ridership is way up in comparison to the absolute cratering of ridership, you know, during the pandemic. You know, it's up to basically pre-pandemic levels, you know, generally speaking, in the subways in particular, which is a good thing. You know, the subways need ridership. It's the lifeblood of the city, etc. That kind of has, you know, that can cut both ways. So in a lot of cases where, you know, ridership was very low, you had kind of areas that were a little bit desolate and people were afraid of kind of like riding alone and in, you know, platforms and cars that were, you know, often didn't have that many people in them. But obviously once you kind of get back everyone back on other trains, now you have a lot more people and a lot more potential for friction. And there have been, you know, I think to put it diplomatically, people's ability to sort of navigate social interactions that might be tense or distressing has suffered since the pandemic. And so there's, you know, and you hear this in all sorts of sectors like airplanes and just customer service, where people are just more prone to kind of like, you know, exploding. Exactly. Or whatever. Then I think there's kind of these issues that sort of get, and you alluded to this, kind of like folded into the issue of crime, but aren't really like crime per se. So homelessness, for example, obviously the shelter system is overburdened right now. I mean, it was overburdened already to a certain extent, but like with the sort of almost parallel migrant shelter system, there's just a stretching of resources and rents have continued to go up. There was a slight dip, I think, at some point this year, but by and large, rents are way up since kind of they nosedived during the pandemic. And so a lot of New Yorkers, I think there was a study by, I think the state comptroller or there was an analysis of data. The city does a housing vacancy survey every, I think, 3 years in conjunction with the Census Bureau. And essentially an analysis of that data showed that I think a full third of New Yorkers are now severely rent burdened, meaning that they're spending about a half of their income on rent. And so then people get pushed out onto the streets, you know, and like seeing people who are homeless often sort of makes commuters uneasy, even if there's no, like, you know, quote unquote crime happening per se, right? It's just kind of like there's a kind of a perception that that's a dangerous situation oftentimes. That then I think intermixes with mental health. So there was a study, I think, also by the state comptroller recently that found that, you know, our capacity or kind of mental health beds have declined and are not actually keeping pace with what is an increasing need. And so there are often people who just are not receiving care that they need. And so they end up where they end up. They end up on the subways, in part because that's often the only shelter that's available, right? I mean, the city obviously has a directive to shelter people, but people often don't like to go into the shelters. And then where do you go? You go into the subways, right? And so, I mean, obviously there's, you know, drug use is a, you know, we actually have had another rise in overdose deaths in the last year, which is very unfortunate. And you know, the opioid epidemic in particular is kind of ravaging the state right now. We have actually some very concerning numbers on that front. And so people are suffering from kind of a confluence of events, often that feed into each other. And so I think, like, they get pushed into the subways. They might be struggling with mental health issues. They might be struggling with drug abuse issues. There's a patchwork. I think I actually wrote about this Rebus Center recently. There's kind of a patchwork of systems that are supposed to deal with that. There are city systems. Some of them are like NYPD training. Some of them are like Department of Homeless Services. And there's the state teams that have clinicians, and they're all kind of working around each other. But even those teams, right, they often like, oh, you know, do you want to go to a shelter? Do you want to go receive treatment? And, you know, they can offer something for like a couple of days or something, but people end up back on the streets. I mean, without kind of additional shelter beds and, you know, more broadly affordable housing, we can't solve the problem fundamentally. And so, you know, people see that and they feel that those situations are dangerous, and sometimes they turn dangerous, right? They're not always dangerous, but they kind of can lead into danger. And so that, I think, that perception as well kind of like also creates a kind of environment of unease, even if the kind of technical incidence of crime remains pretty low.
In the groups that you're speaking of, or kind of the social issues around this, one of the areas that you write about, I think, more eloquently than anyone else I know, is immigration. You've written about migrants being scapegoated by this administration and in a number of you know, issues that the city, you know, says it's tapped out on its budget and migrants are to blame. I'm just wondering if there's any correlation with some of the perception that you're talking about, the arrival of migrants in the city, and really any real data that you've seen around, you know, their presence in crime stats, or in like, is there like a drain on any of the social services that you're talking about in terms of homelessness, mental health, drug addiction? Like, is there something to connect there?
These issues have been interlinked in the kind of the public imagination, including, you know, by the mayor himself, you know, which I still sometimes just randomly think about that time that he went on an NYPD raid and like personally donned a bulletproof vest and went on like a migrant crime ring raid or something. Clearly that was, I mean, like, he, you know, he wanted to make that association. He would probably deny that, but it was obvious. And a lot of other people have tried to make that association. I was actually looking at, there was a Newsweek poll of about 1,000 New York City voters that found just this week that many, you know, 70% of people blamed migrants for the, you know, quote unquote current crime rate. And, you know, basically sort of majorities of voters like have in their minds current migrant arrivals and crime as sort of a, you know, a linked issue. There have been some sort of high profile incidents. So there was the, you know, so-called migrant beating in Times Square that involved, you know, several police officers getting into an altercation with migrants. I mean, as I wrote about, I think a a couple of months ago, that was a more complicated issue than it sort of appeared in the, you know, in at first glance. Body camera footage, you know, subsequently contradicted some of what the police had said and whatnot. But then that it's kind of the image that gets burned into people's mind. Now, I will say, though, that having like looked at this data and sort of talked to a number of people about this, I mean, I really can't find anything to indicate that there really is any link almost at all. You know, most studies have shown over time that, you know, immigrants tend to commit crimes of all types, both violent and nonviolent, at generally lower rates than the native born. I mean, and this has been replicated over many years in various different municipalities. And, you know, in New York, it's not like the immigration status of people who are arrested for crimes is recorded. And there's a specific reason for that, right? That's part of our kind of New York City sanctuary provisions. Like, we don't really want to be recording, you know, the immigration status of people who are arrested. There are some exemptions that actually the mayor was talking about relatively recently. There's like a list of, I think it's like 170 or so crimes that under which the city will cooperate with, you know, immigration enforcement if somebody's convicted. And but there also has to be a judicial warrant. So it's extremely rare that that happens. In fact, I think there were zero such cases last year. So, you know, that's kind of an aside. But, you know, there just doesn't seem to be any evidence, at least in terms of crime itself, that it's being driven to any sort of measurable extent by immigrants. Now, I think there is some concern on the horizon currently because of the city's recent settlement or agreement with the Legal Aid Society to modify the so-called right to shelter, the Callahan Consent Decree, that would, you know, basically cap shelter stays for adult migrants at 30 days. Or 60 if they're under 23, in which case, you know, a lot of people suspect that you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of migrants just like aren't going to be able to access shelter anymore. It's unclear, you know, how that's going to affect things. Obviously, if people get desperate enough, like there's a chance that, like, you know, criminal activity will occur. Though, I mean, I would imagine that insofar as it does, it'll be like, you know, shoplifting from the supermarket or something. I mean, there's nothing that I have seen that to me signals that there's any concern that people will be engaging in violent crime. Now, obviously, you know, any population that's large enough, you're going to have people who in that population who are going to be, you know, engaged in sort of like violent criminal activity. But on a statistical level, there's really nothing there. Now, in terms of kind of broader resources, obviously, you know, I have criticized some of the you know, administration's accounting practices when it comes to migrant spending. And I think that's actually been somewhat vindicated because they have, you know, changed those projections a lot. And a lot of the cuts that were implemented have been reversed. And I think we kind of called that one. But that's, I mean, no matter how you slice it, though, there has been significant spending.
When you see this fragility you're alluding to, right, when people kind of explode on the subway or on the streets, do you have a standard reaction? Do you have any advice on what we should do when we see this?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, like, first and foremost, don't sort of put yourself at personal risk, right? If somebody's really having, like, a kind of a violent outburst or something like that, you know, it's not on you. It's not your job to intervene in that kind of a scenario. But if somebody just seems like they, you know, need a little bit of help, I mean, sometimes, you know, like, just talking to people can make them feel seen. Like, a lot of, you know, the problems arise out of people who just feel like they're kind of like invisible or that no one's kind of understanding what they're going through. So it's, you know, talking to people like people, I think, goes a long way. You know, there are teams that kind of go around the subway system in particular, kind of like looking for people to provide services to. They will have, you know, oftentimes, like, you know, there are nonprofits and then there's like city, you know, homeless services personnel. If you get the police involved, you know, and sometimes that's necessary, I would stick around. I think it's always your right to observe and film the police. By the way, there is no, you know, this has been, you know, ruled on by the courts. You are allowed to film police activity. And I think kind of just like making sure that things go smoothly is a good thing.
To read our full story and what's really going on with NYC crime, click the link in our show notes. That's all for today. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting us as we do our best to support our community. We couldn't do it without you. For more stories like this, make sure to subscribe to our newsletter at epicenter-nyc.com. Our intro music is All the Pretty Horses by Kara Vika. You can find more of their music on their website, linked to in our podcast description.